The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
A winter storm is sweeping across central and eastern United States, bringing over a foot of snow in some places and claiming five lives so far. The certification of Donald Trump's election victory did go ahead, despite almost 10 inches of snow falling outside the U.S. Capitol building. Now, to get the latest from the U.S., we're joined by J.D. Capiluto, lead writer for Semaphore's flagship newsletter. Good morning, J.D.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Now, let's talk about the storm, first of all. Is this terribly significant, or is just what you expect in January of a new year?
Well, it's significant in that a lot of the places that this storm is hitting do not usually get this much snow. You know, you're having, you know, 14 inches in places like Kansas City. This was their worst storm in, I believe, 30 years. So these places do get snow. It's not totally unheard of, but the scale is certainly not great. It's not a great start to the year for these communities. And it's especially bad because it's going to stay very cold in these areas. You know, they're waking up today to temperatures in the teens or the single digits, and it's going to stay like that for a while. So looks like the snow isn't going to melt anytime soon.
So yesterday in D.C., the only storming of the Capitol was by a snowstorm.
Correct. Yes, the certification went by very smoothly. It was nothing like January 6th, 4 years ago.
Were there any moments during that process? I heard some reports that Kamala Harris was greeted by, because she would be, of course, in the chair for this process as vice president, that she was greeted by a mixture of cheers and boos.
I know that it was kind of an awkward proceeding for her, definitely. There were cheers after she announced Donald Trump's victory and his electoral points, how many he had received, and then the Democrats then cheered on her end. But overall, a very standard procedure, and both members of both parties stood and cheered after, you know, it was formally done. This acknowledged the peaceful transfer of power in the U.S., you know, a time-honored tradition. And Republicans were obviously happy with what was announced there. So overall, a smooth process.
And no one with a sense of irony in the chamber thinking back 4 years.
I'm sure it was in a lot of those lawmakers' minds. You know, it was really a traumatic moment, honestly, for a lot of people. I think this year they are probably just thankful that you know, it was playing out in a much more relaxed way.
Now, there is never a dearth of news about Donald Trump, and his legal team attempted to delay sentencing yet again in the hush money case.
He did, yes. That was unsuccessful. He is going to be sentenced, I believe, this Friday. This is his case out of New York in which he's convicted in hush money payments to an adult film star. You know, a lot of this is kind of up in the air. There's no playbook for how a president-elect is to be sentenced for a criminal case in the U.S. just days before their inauguration. So we'll see how it plays out. One big question will be, does he show up to the sentencing? In person, he showed up to a lot of the other proceedings in this case in person as kind of a show of force. So that'll definitely be something to watch that just adds to kind of the, the level of news that's happening here recently.
Now, the judges actually said he's not going to go to jail. No drama. We can do it all by Zoom if we want. So it depends, I suppose, on the mood of the president-elect, whether he wants a bit of a circus in New York or otherwise.
Exactly. He's shown a penchant for liking those types of things. And he kind of might want to show up just to kind of say, look, I got no jail time. Hey, you know, look at me. I made it this far. Everyone, you know, was doubting him, you know, as when the conviction happened, for example, when he was found guilty. He might want to show up just to kind of, so to say, rub it in people's faces that he's not getting jail time.
And of course, he might turn up to reiterate his threats against the members of the Justice Department, both in New York and across the federal system, just to indicate his intentions from day one.
It's surely likely. You know, he's shown that he's not afraid to kind of threaten to go after political opponents here and people who have wronged him in the past. For example, members of the January 6th committee, who he said should be jailed. And he's used his own personal, issues with the Justice Department and his own, legal affairs to then threaten others and kind of go on what critics say is kind of a revenge tour. But we'll just have to see kind of what plays out as he takes power. So much of this is kind of up to what actually happens. As we know with Trump, he'll say a lot of things and then it's kind of, he'll sometimes reverse on it. And yeah.
Yeah. Now, Judge Marchand, who's going to impose sentence on Friday, probably just wants it off his docket at this point. It's been going on and on and on. But is the case truly over, or are there more avenues of appeal?
I believe this would be the end. I haven't been following the legal specifications of this specific case closely. I do know in the U.S. you can often appeal or go after. So there's a chance that they could try to take it to an even higher court. But at this point, with him coming in as president-elect, there's probably only a certain number of avenues for prosecutors to take if they don't like the sentencing. And I believe there is probably a world where Trump could appeal the sentencing as well if it's something he doesn't like. So it's kind of a time-honored American tradition of fighting these things out in the courts if a decision doesn't go your way.
Now, it just occurs to a question I should ask you, J.D., given your initials. What of your namesake, J.D. Vance? Where is he?
He was at the Capitol yesterday, affirming his own victory. He is a senator. So, you know, that was something that was a big moment for him as well. He got a lot of attention. A lot of his colleagues were on the floor with him, on the House floor, congratulating him. So he kind of, like Kamala Harris, had a role in affirming the own race that he was contested.
Yeah, but he has been very low-key from the perspective on this side of the Atlantic. He's been invisible. Perhaps you've seen more of him.
A little bit more, but that's a good point. A lot of it has revolved around Trump. It's kind of back to that mode of following, everything that he posts is kind of a foreign policy decision, for example, that can move markets. You know, he's threatened other countries. Vance has stayed a little bit more under the radar. You're right about that. And that's interesting to hear how he's perceived across the Atlantic. Yeah.
Now, you mentioned threatening other countries, and we know he threatened Canada to annex it as the 51st state. Mm-hmm. Justin Trudeau has now fallen on his sword. We'll be talking about that a bit later on in the program. But in South and Central America, we have the standoff with Mexico over the proposed tariffs. We have the threat to take over the Panama Canal once again. With Mexico standing with Panama in its resistance to that idea even. And now in Honduras, there's been a threat by the president there, President Castro. She has threatened to expel the U.S. military from a very extensive base that the U.S. military has in that country.
Exactly. So this stems from Donald Trump's, mass deportation plans, in which he's going to send undocumented immigrants back to places they came from, which in this case would include Honduras. And so in response to this, yes, as you mentioned, President Castro has taken an approach that kind of mirrors Donald Trump's own diplomatic approach to these other partner countries of kind of a strong arm, aggressive threat. He threatening to kick the U.S. military out of a base there. It's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out, because it does kind of align with Trump's more transactional style and kind of very curious to see how he responds to this. Because yes, he has shown that he's not afraid to go after historic partners in regions and buck kind of norms when it comes to this stuff. But at the same time, the U.S. isn't really inclined to give up its military base there. It's a very strong presence in the region, and it's really important for the U.S. In their effort to counter China's influence in South and Central America. They don't have quite as a military presence there right now, although they're making inroads in trade and other avenues. Yeah. So, yeah.
Honduras and China have signed a $275 million cooperation agreement, which would help boost infrastructure for educational establishments in the Central American country, that is Honduras. So, you know, China certainly making overtures there to President Castro, who did visit Shanghai. And she said, faced with the hostile attitude of mass expulsion of our brothers, we would have to consider a change in our policies of cooperation with the United States, especially in the military arena. Without paying a cent for decades, they maintain military bases in our territory, which in this case would lose all reason to exist in Honduras. In other words, you expel our guys, you're not having a military base here. End of.
Exactly. And that statement does kind of, just to kind of bring it back to Donald Trump, it kind of like rings true to how he sometimes threatens other countries of, not paying a cent, that sort of thing. It kind of speaks his language a little bit. But again, a lot of this does stem from you know, the cooperation with China as well. You know, for example, we saw them open a massive port in Peru. These examples of these massive infrastructure projects and trade projects that help them make inroads in the region counter the U.S., which has more of a military presence. This is going to make the U.S. not inclined to want to easily give up this military base.
A final thought about any fragmentation in the MAGA base supporting Trump. I mean, we see that the guy in Vegas who took his own life before exploding that Tesla and the shooter in New Orleans both profess to support Trump.
Yes, it's going to be very interesting to kind of see how the MAGA base proceeds, because at this point it's a very large, diverse, you know, coalition. That's one of the reasons that Donald Trump was able to sweep to power in this way. I think the last time I spoke to you, Pat, was right after the morning after the election, and I mentioned kind of the diverse range of people that kind of now came under the MAGA umbrella. And I think that kind of possible fragmentation over the next 4 years is going to be a very important storyline. I mean, from the high level, at least, it's always kind of hard to with these individual horrible attacks to kind of judge the people's motivations. But I can say on a high level, there's already been some signs of cracks within the base. For example, over H-1B visas, which are these kind of high like lottery visas for highly skilled workers. You've seen some people on the right say, you know, no more immigration, and this includes that. And then you have figures like Elon Musk, Vivek Ramaswamy, saying, no, actually, we need the H-1B visas. And so it's kind of this fault that is breaking over.
Yeah, it's kind of
immigration.
Musk saying, we need highly educated foreigners because you MAGA dummies are just too thick to take our jobs.
Well, Vivek Ramaswamy kind of said it in terms of it's like a American culture issue. And so it kind of opened all of these, issues when it comes to, you know, culture and, you know, American greatness, so-and-so that were very thorny issues and struck very definitely struck a nerve among many on the right.
We shall see how it all unfolds in just a few days' time. Mm-hmm. J.D. Capelluto, lead writer for Semaphore's flagship newsletter, thank you very much for joining us on the program.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.